From Puros Worldwide, this
is FSN. Don't feel too sorry for Frank Lampard. He'll be well compensated, so he will. It's Monday. How you doing? Hope you had a good weekend. Welcome to your Richie Allen radio show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC.
You're listening to the Richie Allen radio show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
And Dr. Vernon Coleman will join the program in the second hour. It's been a couple of weeks since he was last on. I'm looking forward to hearing from him. I know you are as well. If there's anything you'd like me to put to Vernon, do put it to me through Twitter. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter, at BBG Richie on Twitter. A very good afternoon, good evening, good morning, good night, wherever you are in the world. You are with the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live from Salford, where it is still freezing. It is brass monkeys. Got out the door this morning and it was a blanket of snow everywhere. Young golden retriever, of course, thrilled to bits. Me not so. But anyway, yes, I had a nice weekend. Yes, I spent some of it in your company yesterday morning. I'm well aware of that. But a nice quiet weekend. I can recommend to you, if you are of the film watching type, if you're a film watcher, saw Kevin Costner and Diane Lane in a film called Let Him Go, which is very good. It's very good indeed. Well, it should be good, shouldn't it, with Diane Lane? What a great actress Diane Lane is. And Kevin Costner, of course, no slouch either. The film is an interesting one. It's set in, now I don't want to get this wrong, it's set in the 40s or 50s, maybe earlier, but Kevin Costner and Diane Lane play a married couple in the autumn of their lives, and their son dies. And their son dies, and his widow takes their grandchild away to start a relationship with somebody else, and they are a bit concerned about the welfare of the child, so they set off on a kind of a road trip, do the grandparents. And I'll say no more, because if I was to say any more, what should I just be spoiling the plot? Nobody likes plot spoilers, so we'll leave that one there. Good film though, I highly recommend it. Okay, well, lot to get into. Before we get into the lot that there is to get into, please do get onto richieallen.co.uk when you get a chance. New articles going up there at the moment, mostly from me. The occasional one I nick, with his permission, it must be said, from Dr. Vernon Coleman from vernoncoleman.com. But in the very, very near future, I will have one or two guest authors penning opinion pieces that I think you'll find very interesting as well. So, yeah, richieallen.co.uk. A lot going on with the website at the moment, and I'm really proud of it. And thanks so much to Hayden Hewitt. I was thinking of Cillian Murphy today, the Irish actor, in the film 28 Days Later, which might be a Danny Boyle movie. Is it a Danny Boyle movie? I think it very well might be. And we will emerge from lockdown eventually, so long as at least 80% of the population agrees to take one of the coronavirus vaccines, and so long as we agree to take the add-on jabs. That's been everywhere today, by the way. There will inevitably be add-on jabs as we go on forever and ever, for the South African variant and the Brazilian variant and the West Indian variant and the Timbuktu variant and the Daddy Longlegs variant, and so on and so on and so on. So as long as we agree to take the add-on jabs, and as long as we agree to wear masks when they tell us that there's a new variant, and as long as we agree to keep socially distancing forever and ever and ever and ever. So if you take all the new vaccines, the never-ending add-on jabs forever and ever, we'll be allowed to go outside for a little while. But when we get out and about in our town centres, there will be nothing there. Everything will have gone. There'll be no pubs, no shops, no butchers, no bakers, no candlestick makers, no restaurants, or at least very few. At least very few. The fashion retailer Boohoo, you must have heard on UK news today, has bought the Debenhams brand and website for £55 million, but it won't be taking on any of Debenhams 118 high street stores or any of its workforce. Another 12,000 jobs gone at the stroke of a pen today. It's every other day we hear of a 500 jobs going here, 1,000 jobs going there, 10,000 jobs, hundreds of thousands more jobs going in hospitality. And I wrote about this on the website today, the problems facing the hospitality industry and pubs and cafes and restaurants and all the rest of it. Because on Friday, dear listener, and I know you didn't know this until I told you about it. I know you didn't know it. But the government on Friday extended the powers of local authorities to close pubs, restaurants, shops and public spaces. They extended the powers of local authorities until July 17th. Sneaky feckers, eh? And that's horrible news if you're in the restaurant business or the hotel business or if you've got a pub. These businesses are barely surviving as it is. Well, they're not really. We're told that more than half of them will never come back. So what's this local authority stuff? Well, you'll probably remember, if you've been following this stuff very closely, that last July, Matt Hancock, the health secretary, he amended the Coronavirus Act, the Health Protection Coronavirus Restrictions Regulations Act of 2020. He amended it to give local authorities the power to close or to limit access to premises or to stop events. He gave them that power and it had a finite time span, time limit on it. And it was due to expire last week, this power given to local authorities. But it was extended until July 17th this year. And that's bad news if you're a Republican. Sneaky to do it on a Friday, eh? Knowing that or hoping that. Remember the former US Defence Secretary Donald Rumsfeld? Donald, remember him? Back on Monday, September the 10th, 2001. Amazing me, I was working at WLRFM in Waterford. On Monday, September 10th, 2001, we were amused or bemused by hearing or watching Donald Rumsfeld give a press conference on television, admitting that the Defence Department, the Pentagon, had basically lost sight of $2.3 trillion. Remember that? Remember that? And my old mate, Billy McCarthy, rest in peace. Billy knew something was up because he was a seasoned journalist, was Billy. And Billy says to me, Richie, why did he announce that today, Richie, on a Monday, says Billy? He's going to have one hell of a week, isn't he? Well, we know now that Rummy knew that something else would happen the following day that would literally blow him off the front pages. So that's why they do it. So on Friday, let's quietly extend the powers of local authorities. The death knell, really, for businesses, small businesses, hospitality businesses all over the country. Dreadful, dreadful, dreadful stuff. Media City in Salford. Been thinking about that today as well. Now, Media City is, I don't know if you know it or know of it, but if you look it up online, you'll find it. It's in Salford and Salford Quays, and it's basically a collection. I've called it an industrial estate of fake news. It's a collection of buildings owned by the BBC and ITV and the University of Salford and Channel 4. A lot of media outlets there. And I wrote a piece for the website today about what these companies know and what they don't know, because people seem to be fairly confused. You know, I have friends and neighbours who are new to the independent media. And they say to me, Richie, do these BBC people, do they really know these things? Like the statistics around coronavirus, that the average age of somebody dying is 82. Do they know, for example, that the hospitals are no more overwhelmed now than they were last year? Do they know that, Richie? How do you know, Richie, that they know that? That hospital beds have halved in the last 30 years. Nursing staff has gone down. Numbers have declined in recent years. How do you know that they know that? Well, of course they know that. That information is everywhere. It's all over social media. It's all over any number of newspaper articles of the last 5 or 10 years. Any time we reach winter and flu is high and hospitals are under stress, they know that nurses and doctors who are perfectly well. Nothing wrong with them. Like I said before, not even a tickle in the old throat. They know that those people are being sent home for failing, I should say, for showing up positive on the utterly worthless PCR test. The BBC, of course, knows. It knows, of course, that this is the reason why the NHS is under pressure. It's got nothing to do with coronavirus. These people choose not to report this. It's a conscious decision. And I want you to believe that. Believe it, coming from somebody who's worked at pretty much every level of journalism. They know the truth. Whether it's the presenter reading from the auto cue or his or her producer, editor, director, they know the truth, but they choose not to tell you. They know that there are thousands of academics who have written peer-reviewed stuff on lockdowns, on mask wearing. They know this, but they choose to turn a blind eye to that and to not create a space on their programming for the alternative point of view. It's a conscious decision. It's horrible to realise, to understand that because of the implications of it. I know this to be true. As a producer of mid-morning talk radio, at the top level, I had an unfathomable power in deciding on a day-to-day basis what we covered that day and what we didn't. I know this is ground that we kind of went down a few times in the past, but it's very pertinent now because I really do get a lot of correspondence saying that you're the guy, Richie, who says that you will declare when it's conjecture and you will declare when it's fact. How do you know for a fact, I get asked, that these presenters know this stuff and their producers? They do know it. They are well aware of it. You've got to live with that. It's not nice to hear that. They know that the pandemic is a hoax. They know this. They know that hospitals are not being overwhelmed by coronavirus. They know that the World Health Organization last week sent a missive, sent a directive out to every country in the world to tell those testing for a coronavirus not to trust the result when it comes in positive in an asymptomatic person. Think of the implications of that. The WHO, that should have been the story that brought the whole thing down. The WHO says, listen, when somebody isn't sick and they're hunky-dory, if they test positive for coronavirus using the PCR test, something wrong. Do it again. Most of the cases, since this nonsense began last March, most of the cases that they tell you about on the television, the lying bastards, when they tell you we found another 30,000 cases today, most of them are in people who don't even have a runny nose. Worthless. In the same document, the World Health Organization, as I've talked about last week, as we've written about, as Dr. Vernon Coleman has written about, most of these cases, most of these PCR tests are also being performed in a way that goes against the guidelines. Carried out. The World Health Organization says, don't amplify the samples any more than 30 times. What are they doing here in the UK? Minimum of 40 times. And you're sure, Richie, are you, that the collective media knows this? You can guarantee the media knows it. Julia Hartley Brewer talked about it last week. The only mainstream media presenter or radio presenter in the country to talk about it. The rest of them choose to turn a feckin' blind eye to it. It's horrendous. It's horrible. Anybody who's worked in the media, any journalist, me, it's a dreadful thing to have to come to terms with. This could be over in hours if some of the more famous and, I don't know, those with the bigger ratings just called a halt to it. It's all they have to do. But what do you get? You get ITV's Good Morning Britain programme. News, current affairs, entertainment. It's a news programme. They get all the interviews, just like Sky and the BBC. They bring on epidemiologists. They bring on doctors. Do they challenge them? No. And it gets steadily worse. Listen to this from around about 8 o'clock this morning. This is Susanna Reid, Piers Morgan's sidekick. This from a show that isn't a parody. You won't believe your ears. Rather than tell the truth about what's happening, this is what passes for journalism.
I do just want to say to people, you know, this will pass. Things are going to get better. And there's a line in that film, just hold on. That's what we've got to do, just hold on. Because, you know, there is a light now at the end of the tunnel. The lockdown will come to an end. The vaccination programme is making history. It is rolling out at an incredible rate. We are world-beating. More jabs going into more arms, which means that we will be safer. And we can emerge from this darkness blinking into the light. And I promise it will get better. So if you're finding it tough right now, you know, there are resources online. And Hussein Manuel puts it so perfectly, doesn't he, in that piece of film. But I promise it will get better.
I'm proud to call myself a journalist. How could she look herself in the mirror after saying that and doing that this morning on national television? I have no idea. It is the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in the northwest of the UK. The time is exactly 20 minutes past five. Don't forget Dr. Vernon Coleman will be with me a little bit later on. Plenty more news and analysis to come before then, though, after this from Ozzy Osbourne. Ozzy Osbourne and Crazy Train on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Steve tweets me. He says, Richie, Osbourne probably understands what's going on with COVID better than UK politicians. I doubt that very much, Steve. Right now, it's debatable whether Ozzy Osbourne knows where he is or what time of day it is, or even what day it is, but maybe you're right, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know. Thanks for the tweet there. Hi to Jing Dimensions. Big fan of that song as well. It's a great song, that. Regardless of whether you're into your hard rock or heavy rock or heavy metal, I don't pigeonhole stuff like that. Hi to Seb T. How you doing, Seb? Nice to hear from you today. To Alan Bass Ninja, to Natalie, to Fabrizio, to David. Keep the tweets coming in. Dr. Vernon Coleman joining the programme in the second hour. It's Monday's radio show. So it is. Now, the quarantine story is a big story in UK media today. The quarantine story. The UK Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, is expected to tell us all tomorrow that Britons, or people living in Britain, like me, if we want to go on a holiday this coming summer, we will be forced to quarantine for up to 14 days in a hotel when we return. And at our own expense. How do we know this? Well, sources tipped off the UK media last night that Johnson will announce this tomorrow. When you get back from Santa Ponza or Benalmadena or Torremolinos, you'll be immediately taken to a hotel by security staff, regardless of your nationality, where you've come from. That's the way it's going to be. And it could be very expensive, says Kate McCann, Sky News correspondent. She's been covering the story.
Another issue where things have been going back and forth over the last week or so. Inside Cabinet, Prime Minister's top team of ministers, there had been some disagreement on closing the borders. It would mean that all travellers coming to the UK, potentially including British nationals, would have to quarantine in a hotel. That could be for 10 days or 14 days. And it could cost £1,000 or £2,000, which would have to be paid by the person travelling. Now, the aim of this is to ensure that no new variant or strain of COVID-19, which could be more dangerous, comes into the UK from abroad. That, of course, would completely change the picture and the plans the Prime Minister has to reopen everything. But doing that has an economic cost, not just on the travel industry, but also on airlines too, and everything that surrounds it. So there had been some in Cabinet saying it's just too big a risk, too big a cost to the economy, whereas others say no, the danger really is these new strains. It sounds like over the weekend the Chancellor now is on board with this policy, Rishi Sunak, and that's crucial because the cost of that could well be borne out by the Treasury over the next couple of years. He is sympathetic to the idea. So we could get an announcement from the Prime Minister on that over the next couple of days.
there you are, tomorrow, presumably. And you have to understand, dear listener, I know it, we forget sometimes, but you have to understand, this lockdown is killing people. It's rotting them from the inside out. It's hurting them. It's depressing them. It's saddening them. It's causing them to fall out with people. It's causing them to fall out with their spouses, with their children. It's dreadful. It's miserable. It's no type of existence at all. The joy has been sucked out of life. That is why they can say this outlandish shit, and there's little, if any, blowback against it. There's even been talk that you'd have an electronic tag, a bracelet, like a criminal, to make it more, I suppose, to make it easier for them to keep you confined in the hotel that they've put you in. It's this mad stuff now, in 2021. There's no getting away from it. An electronic tag and security armed with tasers and stuff to make sure that after you come back pink as a salmon from your sunny holiday in Spain, that you stay in a hotel where you would be expected for 10 days or 2 weeks, depending on whatever they come up with, to confine yourself to your room. Your meals would be delivered. I'm not joking. It's insane. But people are sick and tired of this. You can boil this whole scamdemic down to a couple of very simple sentences. You really can. It's as simple as this. In order to get the vast majority of people on planet Earth to take an experimental mRNA vaccine and subsequent vaccines, they decided to make life unbearable. Coercion. That's right. So come back from your halls, 10 days to 2 weeks in a hotel, monitored by security. They haven't said anything about electronic tag in terms of they're going to do it, but they've discussed it. They're calling it the Australian model, because nobody's allowed into Australia at the moment. Nobody. Unless you're an Australian or a family member of an Australian citizen. But according to Australian Foreign Minister, excuse me, according to the former Australian Foreign Minister, Alexander Downer, is a great name for a politician, Alexander Downer, nobody's allowed to leave Australia. Here he is earlier today with the BBC's Naga Munchetti.
What's the attitude now in Australia? Just people aren't going to travel if they don't absolutely have to. It's worked, has it?
You're not allowed to leave. You're not, if you're an Australian citizen, you're not allowed to leave Australia without getting the permission of the Australian government. That's how vicious it is in Australia. I can leave because I have residency in the UK and I have a job in the UK. But for the average Australian, they can't leave at all unless they have good reason to leave.
It's interesting.
So people don't leave.
It's interesting because people, it's obviously being discussed here, and you know, papers are reporting this is the death knell of the travel industry. Don't bother looking ahead to the summertime. Our summer, obviously, what, May, June, July, August for a summer holiday. Yeah. Is that the same in Australia in terms of long-term travel? Has it just been accepted that that's not going to happen?
Yeah, it has.
And how easily was that accepted?
It is the summer. It is the summer now in Australia. And at the standard holiday resorts in Australia, they are absolutely packed, absolutely packed. So if you want to rent a holiday home, it's just about impossible to do it because people are all having their holidays in Australia because, in effect, you can't leave. So the travel industry, it's a mixed picture. But overall, the travel industry has really suffered because international tourists don't come to Australia at all. I mean, there are almost zero international tourists coming into Australia, whereas normally there would be millions and millions. So they've been slightly compensated. The industry has been slightly compensated by so many Australians holidaying at home instead of going abroad. But, you know, in parts of Queensland and New South Wales, they have really suffered grievously in that industry.
They have, and it's only the beginning. Now, Independent Sage, the scientific advisory group on emergencies, right? Independent Sage is worse than the real Sage. The real Sage advises the government, right? Independent Sage stands on the sidelines and is worse, because if it got its way, Independent Sage would hermetically seal every one of us into our homes until we are vaccinated in order to beat the virus. One of its members, Christina Pagel, Professor of the Clinical Operations Research Unit at University College London, was on Simon McCoy's BBC News 24 programme this afternoon, speaking of shutting the borders and also the virus mutations. Christina Pagel.
I mean, the travel restrictions make perfect sense now that we can see that there are other dangerous variants already identified in Brazil and South Africa. It could be that there are many other countries that just aren't doing genetic sequencing. So what we want to do is avoid importing any other variants into the UK, particularly ones that might resist the vaccine.
Well, we've heard from Moderna this afternoon. They're saying that their vaccine protects against the UK strain, UK variant of this, and also the South African variant, which is positive news, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely really good news. And I'm hoping that Pfizer and AstraZeneca will be able to say the same soon. But there's no doubt that COVID is mutating and that it can mutate, and that there will be a lot of pressure on it to mutate in a way that will escape the vaccine, because that way it can affect more people. And that's what viruses want to do.
Yeah, there's there's a lot of pressure on the virus. A lot of pressure.
There's no doubt that COVID is mutating and that it can mutate, and that there will be a lot of pressure on it to mutate in a way that will escape the vaccine, because that way it can affect more people. And that's what viruses want to do.
That COVID is going to do all it can to evade the vaccine. We'll have to have loads of vaccines then in the near future. Simon McCoy then asks her a semi-decent question.
Well, are you surprised, are you concerned that we're seeing this increased number of cases at this stage of the pandemic?
In the UK, you mean?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I'm concerned. I guess I'm not surprised, especially given that, you know, we have had the new variant circulating now since November. And it does just seem to make it harder to get cases down. I mean, the good news is that lockdown does seem to be having an effect. The bad news is it's taking a long time to come down. So, you know, we're not seeing the speed of decrease that we saw in the first wave.
It's taking a long time to come down because you keep testing people that there's nothing wrong with them. There's nothing wrong with them. Nothing. They don't even have an ingrowing fucking toenail. There's nothing wrong with them. And you test them using the shit, totally redundant PCR test. You wench. And you know this. And of course, because you cycled the fucking thing 40 times or more, contrary to World Health Organization recommendations, it comes back, ping, the person has got COVID when they don't have anything. Nothing. Only some bits of shitty virus that they might have had a few weeks ago or a month or 2 or 3 months ago. That's what's going on. Cases are not hospitalizations. Cases are not sick people. And the cases are not really real most of the time. So what's going on then, Baldy? Well, my guess remains that they've rebranded a particularly shitty strain of influenza. They've rebranded it as COVID-19. That's my guess. To do what it is they're doing to us now. What they're doing to humanity. That's just my guess. That is conjecture. It's not a fact. It's what I think. Piecing everything together over the last few months, to me, it's the most likely thing. 25 minutes or thereabouts to the top of the hour. Hi to Darren. How you doing, Darren? A good evening to you, wherever you happen to be in the world. Thanks for choosing the Richie Allen Radio Show. Lovely. Hi to Ewan as well. Let's scroll on down there. A lot of people tweeting. Diane says, Richie, if people go along with this totally unscientific nonsense, they deserve what they will get. People wonder why I'm a bit misanthropic. I think it's obvious. Problem is, Diane, in my opinion, and I did say this earlier on, I tried to articulate this earlier on, they're getting their news from one source or two sources only, and they are sick and fed up of it and tired. and they cry a lot and they're depressed. Their lives have been made miserable. They've been denied access to see elderly relatives. They've been denied access to see grandchildren. They can't go out for a meal. They can't go out for a drink with the people they used to go for a meal with. They can't go and play bridge. They can't go and play cards. They can't go to watch Salford Red Devils. They can't go to watch Salford City. They can't do fucking anything. And it's poisoning them. So I totally hear you, Diane, and I'm certainly not having a go at you. I'm speaking figuratively, pejoratively here. What it is they'll take anything now. Anything. Oh, give me anything. Just stop this. We've got another 5 vaccines. We've got some new strain that we found in bats. We found a strain in goats. We found a strain in sheep. We found a strain in tomcats. Not cats, but tomcats specifically. You've got to take all of these vaccines. And if you do that, and if you promise to take social distancing serious for the next 4 or 5 years, then we might let you out. And people will say, yes, yes, do it to me. I'm rolling my sleeve up. Vaccinate the bejesus out of me. Anything but this miserable, horrible, fucking stinking experience of life. That's where people are.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Welcome back to the program. Let's have another tune. Let's have another tune. Why not? It's Monday, right? And you need to just take it a bit easier on a Monday. Hey, Dr. Vernon Coleman of vernoncoleman.com and the brand new tube channel, An Old Man in a Chair. Great guy, great friend of ours. Will be on the program a little after 6 o'clock this evening. You don't want to miss him. This is Eagles. Life in the Fast Lane. Eagles and Hotel California. Let's move swiftly on. Quite a bit to get through. Rich tweets me. He says, Richie, the government has the means to lock down at the drop of a hat. What's stopping them doing this whenever they want? Let's not pretend, he says. And then it just disappears up the second page. He says, what's stopping them doing this whenever they want? Let's not pretend it's ever going back to what we consider normal. It's never going to go away unless there is drastic civil action to stop it, says Rich. Now, I wrote about this today in an article on richieallen.co.uk. I should be a rapper. And there is something allegedly occurring on the 30th of January, which is a Saturday. The great reopening. Apparently businesses around the country have committed to opening come hell or high water on January 30th. Now, I've tried to get some comment on this. I've reached out to one or two hairdressers who have been in the news of late, and I've invited them on with no success to try and get a grip on this great reopening to see, is it just a thing that's just the social media thing that's not got any real energy behind it? Or if it is a serious thing, and if a lot of businesses are on Saturday, January 30th, which is this coming Saturday, if they are going to say, well, we're going to open. It's our human right to open our place of business, and we're going to do it. I will have to wait and see, I suppose, because I can't get anywhere with it trying to find out what's going on. Maybe you know more than I do. Feel free to tweet me at BBG Richie. It's quite often that others know more than I do on these things. Right, okay, let's move swiftly on then. This is interesting as well. Let's move away from coronavirus for a minute. I hear you breathe a sigh of relief. Now, in a video called Identity, Understanding Sexual and Gender Identities, produced as part of the corporation's online resource material for teachers, that's the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, it has produced a video for teachers entitled Understanding Sexual and Gender Identities. A group of children aged between 9 and 12 discuss gender identities with head teachers. Here is a very short clip of the BBC video. Sure, tis a bit mad.
What are the different gender identities?
That's a really, really exciting question to ask.
I just love the over-enthusiastic head teacher.
What are the different gender identities?
That's a really, really exciting question to ask.
What a question! The answer is male and female, of course, but don't let that stop you.
Do you know, there are so many gender identities. So we know we've got male and female, but there are over 100, if not more, gender identities now. So we know that some people might feel like they're two different genders. So people might think they're bi-gender. And then you've got some people who might call themselves genderqueer, who are just like, I don't really want to be anything in particular.
Genderqueer. I don't want to be anything in particular. Sarah Vine has been writing opinion pieces on this type of thing. And she asks a couple of questions in her article in today's Daily Mail. Vine writes, here we have powerful authority figures actively encouraging impressionable youngsters to question their sexual identities at a stage in their lives when sex is not even or shouldn't be on the agenda. It is a masterclass in indoctrination at the licence fee payer's expense. Before they've even dipped their toe in the world of adult desire, these children are being taught to question their own bodies. Gender dysphoria, a serious and distressing condition you wouldn't wish on anyone, is presented as something really exciting and special, worthy almost of a gold star. It isn't education, it's bordering on child abuse. And she goes on to write, all I could think of as I watched those fresh faces listening with wide-eyed concentration was poor Ciara Bell, the young woman who recently won her case against the Tavistock and Portman Trust, the NHS Gender Reassignment Clinic in London. Ciara bravely came forward to testify that her desire at the age of 16 to transition from female to male had been encouraged by adults who seemed less interested in her well-being and more focused on pushing an agenda. That's good stuff from Sarah Vine. On Talk Radio this afternoon, Ian Collins got into this with the co-founder of the LGB Alliance, a woman called Bev Jackson, and this is good.
It's propaganda, and it certainly shouldn't be told to children. It's damaging. It's not funny. Yeah. It isn't satire, and it causes a lot of damage. I think anybody who listened to Dr. David Bell, who spoke very, very movingly, a very eminent psychiatrist, on Channel 4 on Saturday, about the harm this causes. It isn't just harmful. It is harmful propaganda. If children get the idea that their body parts, that's what says in the video, are different from how they feel inside, some children, especially children on the autistic spectrum, children who are struggling with their sexual orientation as teenagers, they go online, they find all sorts of material, and they think, oh, it means I'm trans. And then they go down a harmful path.
Yeah.
And I think this is really very unfortunate. It's well-meaning, but it's harmful propaganda.
And I wonder, this business of 100 different genders, which seem to be a figure just sort of plucked out of the air, as far as I can gather, are we sort of in danger, do you think, here, perhaps, of, you know, translating a proclivity or a penchant or just a choice as a gender? Somebody says, well, this is what I'm into, or this is what I do, or this is what I stand for. Therefore, it must be a gender. And people are scared witless to criticise that because they wrongly confuse this debate with the debate of sexuality, back to the Stonewall issue. So people think, well, if I say anything against this, that makes me some kind of bigot. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be seen as some kind of homophobe or genderphobe or whatever it happens to be. So I'll sign up to it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. People don't want to be criticised and called bigots. And in fact, this has got nothing to do with bigotry. Biology is not bigotry. We know, and children hopefully still learn in biology lessons what male and female mean. And they're not two of 100 different genders. They are, you know, the two sexes that human beings are. And that's what children should be taught. Children need to be taught facts and not to be confused with ideology. ideology and propaganda.
Absolutely. And what about creepy Joe Biden, the current president of the United States of America? And one of his first bills was to reverse pretty, what I thought was pretty sensible legislation by his predecessor, Donald Trump, has been reversed by creepy Joe Biden. He's allowing kids now to use the bathroom of whatever gender they choose to be and to play on whichever sports teams of the gender they think they are or choose to be. Crazy. Crazy stuff. And of course, the implications for female safety and for women-only spaces. I won't labour the point. You know this stuff. But you know, people are scared to speak out. Why? Well, because they might be fired. That's going to be a common dismissal in the future. Reason for dismissal. You won't be woke enough. You won't be woke enough. It's not impossible. You know, in the near future, you might get regular pop quizzes from your employer. Do you think that Amanda over there is really a woman? And Amanda has got five chins. Wearing a dress and has got 5 o'clock shadow. And you have to say no because you're true to yourself. And you say no and you get handed your P45. You know? Amanda says that she's a woman. Therefore, she must be a woman. I don't think so. I can see the bulge in Amanda's, underneath Amanda's dress there. Mada, do you accept that you've got white privilege? No, I don't. You're fired. You're gone. But somebody is anticipating such a scenario. And her name is Helen Pluckrose. I'm very fond of surnames, me. I'm not jesting here now. I do like to find out where surnames originated from. Helen Pluckrose. Now, we know what the verb to pluck means. And we know what a rose is. So maybe the answer is in there somewhere. Helen Pluckrose has anticipated a future where you might be in trouble for not being woke enough. And she's founded an organisation called Counterweight. Counterweight will offer support to people in danger of losing their jobs for not having the right opinion. Here she is speaking today to Talk Radio's Mike Graham, and I like the cut of her jib.
You know, I think people have a right to believe this if people do feel guilty about their race or their sex and they believe themselves to have been socialised into white supremacist or patriarchal beliefs or whatever else. They have the right to believe that. What they don't have the right to do is insist that other people believe that. Mm. The people we hear from mostly are white people who don't believe that they're racist and don't want to affirm that they are, and black and South Asian people who don't want to be forced to testify to a very theoretically specific experience of racism. So we're a liberal humanist organization. We believe as liberals that people can evaluate ideas and reject or accept them.
Right.
Yes.
What has happened, do you think, to the people in society who would have previously kind of defended basically what you're defending, which is the right to have a series of personal thoughts, a series of personal beliefs, which you don't necessarily want to preach to people every Saturday at Speaker's Corner, but which you want to be able to hold dear to yourself without somehow being criticised or worse, being painted as some kind of mad extremist?
That's what we're seeing at the moment. We're seeing a loss of liberalism, that idea of that respect for the marketplace of ideas, the idea of plurality. We can coexist while having different approaches. Right. To things. And this, I mean, I've looked at the scholarship. There, you know, other sociologists have looked at what social change is, why is this happening. I recommend The Coddling of the American Mind and The Rise of Victimhood Culture. They're both very relevant. But I've looked at the scholarship and the activism and what's coming out of the universities. And it's really very much based at the moment on a Robin DiAngelo approach or a queer theory approach, where it really is believed that by not believing the right ideas about these invisible systems of power and privilege, you are perpetuating oppressive systems. You have to say the right things to fix things. Discourses are dangerous. So if you mustn't sort of suggest that woman is a biological category, because otherwise you're contributing to an environment that kills trans women.
Yes.
This is a belief now.
It is a belief. I get great fun looking at some of the conversations my friend and your friend, Hayden Hewitt, has with some of these lunatics on Twitter. Is it the right thing to do? Is it journalistic? Is it to say lunatics? They are fucking lunatics. They're lunatics, excuse the French. They're absolutely fucking lunatics. You know, to say that you're putting trans people's lives in danger because your determination that, you know, females are, you know. Ah! Yeah. But that's where we're going in the future. You won't be woke enough. And I think people will become so paranoid in the near future that they will go out of their way in the way that David Brent did in The Office, and that amazing scene in The Office when David Brent, the boss of the paper firm in Slough, wanted to be seen as woke, wanted to be seen as modern. He started sucking up to this black gentleman who'd just come to work at the firm with a group of other people from another firm that had been shut down. So they shut down one firm, sent the staff to Ricky Gervais, to David Brent. One of the chaps is a black guy, fairly genial guy, the character, fairly easygoing guy. And David Brent starts to suck up to him, starts to tell him that Sidney Poitier was a great actor and all this sort of shit. That's where we're going. People will be compelled to virtue signal, you know, or they might feel that they're losing ground in their career. I just find it fascinating. I think I'm so lucky to be 46 and to be self-employed, not to have to contend with any of this, not to have to worry my big baldy head about any of it, about having to say the right thing. And of course, that doesn't mean that I go about my life insulting people. No, of course I don't. Strange times, eh? Who would have believed it? When I went to uni, if somebody had said to me that, you know, you might be accused of endangering the lives of transgender people if you don't accept that they're real women. Jesus, I'd never have believed it. Not in a million years. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show for Monday, the 25th of January, 2021. Dr. Vernon Coleman will be with me not too long from now. VernonColeman.com. His books and links to his articles are on there. Do check them out. I have of late begun to take his articles and post them on richieallen.co.uk with his permission. Of course, he's totally credited, and there are links on the articles to his website. Please do get onto his website and bookmark it there as well. Brandnewtube.com to see an old man in a chair. That's where those videos are uploaded these days, because YouTube began last year to delete many of them and to threaten to delete his channel, as is the style of the time. As is the style of the time. Let's have a look. Bob says, you can be who you want, but what you are will never change. Just like you can be a footballer or a dancer or a teacher, a million and one things, but you will still be just one of three things, but with the ability to be anything. Now, I think I eavesdropped or jumped right in, two-footed into a conversation there that has nothing to do with me, but there you are. That's Twitter for you. Mwinga says, Richie, gender aside, please do not label me human. Acknowledge me as a rabbit like my great uncle Roger Rabbit from now on. That's the logical conclusion. That's where it all goes. Hi to Patricia. Patricia, how you doing, Patricia? Thanks for listening to the programme today. I really appreciate that. Jason says, Bill Gates now owns most of the farmlands in America. He isn't breeding livestock. So the little pigtail twat Greta has been telling her flock of pricks, says Jason, that they have to stop eating meat as the livestock is contributing to the global warming. That's right. It is a claim that has been made. Hi to my Scottish listeners, including Liz. How you doing, Liz? And happy Burns Night to one and all. I said happy Burns Night to one and all. Indeed, I was listening to various news reports today about Burns Night, and Jimmy Cranky herself, otherwise known as Nicola Sturgeon, was in Edinburgh, was she? She was given the latest COVID-19 figures, was she? The little bollocks, telling people to stay indoors, protect the NHS and all that crap. And she was discussing, was Jimmy Cranky, how you could have a really safe virtual Burns Night. So apparently that's what people are doing. virtual Burns nights, night tonight, all across Scotland. And where Scottish folk are scattered around the world, presumably they're doing the same thing, having a virtual Burns night. All right. I'm going to take headlines right now. When I come back from headlines, I'll have another tune. We will then be hearing from Dr. Vernon Coleman. It is Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show, which is live right now from Salford in the northwest, where it's absolutely brass monkeys. But that's okay. Headlines back in 30 seconds.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. Moderna says it's working on a COVID-19 booster shot specifically aimed at fighting a variant of the virus first identified in South Africa. The High Court in Uganda says police and the military must vacate the compound of losing presidential candidate Bobby Wine. And 9 Chinese miners have been found dead as attempts continue to reach others trapped at a gold mine in the east of the country.
Thanks, Simon. Thank you very much. Lots of interesting people coming up this week. Kevin Barrett will be back. Tony Gosling will be on the Richie Allen Radio Show this week as well. Former MP and former Health Minister Edwina Curry will be back on the programme. It's been a long time. It's been a couple of years since Edwina Curry was on, but she will be on the programme with me this week. A lot of interesting people. And I'm going to try and fit a phone-in show as well this week. So I am...
The views and opinions expressed on The Richie Allen Show are those of the guests and the guests alone. They do not necessarily reflect the position of the host or other contributors.
A little bit of Oasis. You can't be half bad if you write a song like that, can you? You can't be too bad if you write a song like that. Oasis and Don't Look Back in Anger. On Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show, which is live from Salford. The time coming up for 6 minutes past 6 o'clock. The programme is now available in lots of places. Should you happen to miss an episode, you can pick it up on podomatic.com. That is my upload. That is where I upload it. That's where I choose to upload it. But from podomatic.com, it automatically then goes to many podcast providers. Deezer, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts. It's all there. It's not on YouTube at the moment and it won't be for a while. I think anything uploaded to YouTube now is likely to see the channel deleted. But anyway, not to worry. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Dr. Vernon Coleman. Vernon, welcome back.
Thank you, Richie. How are you doing?
I'm very well, sir. Thank you. Question number one, inevitably, is about earthing celery plants. How do you go about that before we talk about COVID?
You throw your soil onto the side of the celery. It blanches the stems. Did you know 97% of celery is used for sticking in Bloody Marys?
No, I didn't.
You put a stick of celery in a Bloody Mary. Actually, the stalk is a petiole. I bet you didn't know that. It's the whole bunch that's a stick. If you believe that, apart from the bits about the words, you'll believe my hand on it.
Absolutely. Statistics can prove... I don't know. There's a bad gag about statistics proving things. Welcome back to the programme. It's been a couple of weeks since we had you on. You can start wherever you like tonight. I must say, for people who are tuning in for the first time, the reason, apart from the fact that I enjoy his company, one of the reasons that Dr. Vernon Coleman comes on the programme is because nowhere else in the media is there any rebuttal of the claims made by the chief medical and chief scientific officers and the health secretary. There is no rebuttal. The only place in the UK, the only credible platform that you will hear this is this programme. That is why he's here, to present a learned and experienced alternative approach to coronavirus. So you can start wherever you want. You probably know that Boris Johnson is going to announce tomorrow that anybody who comes back into the country after their holidays, that includes British citizens, will have to spend 10 days in a hotel surrounded by security guards, and they might even have to wear a bracelet, Vernon.
It just becomes slowly more and more unbelievable. It's like being in one of those Charlton Heston sci-fi movies crossed with a Marx Brothers movie. Yeah. The damage that's being done to everything, quite deliberately, of course, is extraordinary. I read that I think it was yesterday, that they flew 1,200 and something tennis people to Australia for the Open. And one of them was asymptomatic but tested positive. And so they put the whole lot in 14 days hard labour.
Yeah.
Sorry, lockdown. Sorry, house arrest. Sorry, hotel arrest.
Yeah.
The world has gone lunatic, and people are putting up with this. Well, I don't understand why people are putting up with so much cruelty, which is the only word for it, so much nonsense. The vaccine, the amount of damage that's being done by the vaccine, the people are desperate for it. They don't seem to have bothered with the facts. The facts being that the World Health Organization said it's not very likely to stop you getting it, and if you get it, it's not very likely to stop you passing it on. That's the World Health Organization. In Scotland, I read people are so desperate to have it that more 16 to 29 year olds have had the vaccine than 70 to 79 year olds, because they honestly believe that the vaccine is going to save them. There was an article in the Times saying vaccine passports are vital for our future, and the vaccine is going to be the key, and unless you have the vaccine, you won't be able to have a passport. This old nonsense. That is so scary, and people don't seem to be taking any notice. People don't seem to be worrying, and yet the problems which are being caused by... I found this afternoon. I have long argued that one of the big problems, unmentioned problems, is that prescription drugs end up in drinking water. Because when you take a prescription drug, I'm getting back to vaccines in a moment. When you take a prescription drug, a very high proportion of the chemical goes out in your urine. And then the sewage farms dump that into rivers. And the drinking water, of course, is taken from rivers. So you can see where this is going. There were huge problems a year or two ago when it was noticed that the fish in rivers were changing because of all the estrogen from the contraceptive pills. And men, of course, have been changing too. Probably why there's all these wimpy buggers who won't say anything about what's happening to their world. But the one thing that I wondered about was, what about vaccines? When you have a vaccine, how much of the vaccine ends up in the drinking water?
Yeah.
The problem is that although they can filter out old bits of loo roll and leaves and certain amounts of stuff, they cannot filter out drug residues. They're too small. So what about vaccines? And I found this paper in American Journal of Clinical Microbiology, 1995. I've only just found this, and I've not used it anywhere else, but the title of the paper is Detection of Measles Virus RNA in Urine Specimens from Vaccine Recipients. And in the conclusion, they say, measles virus RNA was detected in the urine samples of young adults 1 to 13 days after vaccination. Now, they're pumping this experimental vaccine into millions of people. How much of that mRNA vaccine is going to end up in your drinking water? I don't know. They don't know. Nobody knows. That's just another problem to add to the million queries that go with the world's biggest and most corrupt medical experiment in history.
That could be a huge problem. Can I take you... I'm not in any way glossing over that. That could be a massive problem. When you said earlier on about the vaccine, their admittance that it might not prevent you from contracting COVID and it might not prevent you from passing it on. Now, the bit about it mightn't stop you contracting it, am I right in thinking that means it's not really a vaccine then?
It's not really a vaccine, no. I've been very careful not to say it's not a vaccine,
yeah.
Because I have always, since I became a professional writer, I've tried to go mass market. I've tried to reach as many people as possible, and most people think of it as a vaccine. If you say it isn't a vaccine, they'll get confused and think you can't start raving mad.
Yeah.
They won't listen to you. So putting that on one side, no, it isn't really a vaccine. Everything has been changed. The World Health Organization changed the rules about what herd immunity was. They said that you couldn't get herd immunity without a vaccine. Well, since since, I don't know, since I was a little lad, which is about 400 years ago. Immunity was what you got, herd immunity was what you got when enough people acquired immunity to an infectious disease. There was no question of you having to have a vaccine. The World Health Organization changed that rule last June. And they've been changing stuff all the time. But having said that, what the interesting thing, of course, about the World Health Organization is that, and the government in this country, in the UK, is that the government seems to follow World Health Organization rules when it suits. So the World Health Organization said lockdowns were useless, avoid them. It said that PCR cycles recently, it's, as you know, it said that PCR cycles have to be kept low.
Yeah.
20, so the National Health Service has it twice that. So they're picking up anything and everything, which is why there are so many false positives. And of course, they're doing that to keep up the scare, to keep pretending that there's loads of people who've got COVID-19 so that they can keep on making sure that everybody who dies of COVID-19 and nothing else. And even the people in hospital, the figures for the number of people in hospital with COVID-19 are fiddled, because if you go into hospital with a broken leg, they'll test you, and while they're testing you, they'll almost certainly find you positive because of the bits of stuff from the cold you had 18 months ago, and then they'll put you down as a COVID-19 patient in the hospital.
Yeah, they will, yeah.
Go back to the World Health Organization. They've said that the vaccine doesn't stop you getting it necessarily, and it doesn't stop you passing it on if you get it. What it does is it reduces the symptoms a bit, hopefully. And the World Health Organization says all these things, and they all ignored. The government's not said anything about the vaccine. All the papers that I've seen, all the reports that I've seen, have talked about the vaccine as if it prevents people getting it.
Yeah, that's right.
All the papers I've seen have ignored completely the PCR test cycles, rubbish. And all of them have ignored the World Health Organization advice, which is not to have lockdowns. But what they have done, what the government has done, is it's adopted the World Health Organization's change of mind about masks. Because, of course, originally the World Health Organization said, oh, you shouldn't have a mask because it's bad for you, it's dangerous, the science shows that they do more harm than good, and so we shouldn't be wearing masks. And then suddenly, without any change in the science, the World Health Organization changed its mind. And the government in the UK leapt on this and said, oh, goody, now everybody can wear a mask. Regardless of the fact that the diseases that are being created by the masks, bacterial pneumonia being the big one, which is going to kill thousands and thousands of people, and the fact that the people wearing masks for 10, 12 hours a day are going to become demented in 10 years because of the brain cells that have died.
Why are you so certain? Why are you so certain that bacterial pneumonia is going to be a big problem for the mask wearers? There'll be people listening to this now and they'll think, Dr. Coleman is scaremongering now, they'll say. How does he know that?
Because if you look in the small book that I put together called Proof That Masks Do More Harm Than Good, you'll find all the scientific references you'll need. There's, I think, 100 scientific references to the harm that masks can do, including evidence already accumulating from doctors all around the world that bacterial pneumonia is increasing. A lot of the masks that have been tested after they've been worn for a few hours, a lot of the masks that have been tested have shown that they have an enormous quantity of bacteria, fungi, viruses, already in the mask,
yeah.
And because you're breathing that in, you're bringing bacteria into your lungs, and so you get bacterial pneumonia. I know of people who've already had bacterial pneumonia. Shop assistants working in shops got bacterial pneumonia, taken to hospital. Doctors said, "Oh, I don't know how you got that, love. That's very strange at your age." 20-year-old shop assistant. What's happened is that they're wearing the same mask all day long, and the masks, of course, produce a problem in oxygen levels, and they increase carbon dioxide. And before anybody says, oh, surgeons wear them, surgeons are different. Surgeons, and they don't have to wear them. There's evidence to show it doesn't make any difference, and a lot of surgeons don't wear them. But when they wear them, they change them regularly, every few hours, 2 or 3 hours. They change the masks because they don't want to keep breathing in the rubbish that they've been breathing out.
They know better, yeah.
Change them. They're standing still. They're not walking about with their shopping. And they've got in a controlled environment because the air in an operating theatre is kept at a certain temperature. So it's absolute rubbish to say that the surgeons wear masks so we can all wear them all day long. I've been so followed by the 77th Brigade and all the nonsense who were putting endless comments like, masks are really good for you, they don't do any harm at all, on my...
on the videos, on the comments. Yeah, I see that.
And eventually, I decided that I was not going to provide a platform for people who were telling lies and giving misinformation, because otherwise, what's the point in me doing what I'm doing?
Yeah.
And it was either a choice between taking the comments off or stopping doing videos. And for a couple of weeks, I did stop doing videos. And then I decided, look, this is a war. We've got to keep fighting it. So I'm afraid I closed off the comments, because otherwise, everything I say is being contradicted by lying, cheating, anonymous cowards who won't put their name on, but who keep repeating the same garbage about masks being perfectly safe when they are not, about surgeons wearing them all day long, yeah, which they do not, and so on and so forth. So we have this enormous problem with trying to get information out there. It's going to get more and more difficult, of course, now that Biden's in, because he's clamping down on what they call misinformation.
Oh, yes.
What's misinformation? Misinformation is what the government doesn't want you to know.
It's as simple as that. Loads of tweets on this. Lucy Doyle says, Richie, I'll come to Lucy's question in a minute. She's got a good question. My friend Patricia Braunschweiler in Zurich says, has sent me a link to science.news, which is a long-term study that shows that masks, using masks breeds microbes that do all sorts of bad things that can infiltrate the lungs. That's a peer-reviewed thing. I can't retweet anybody until Wednesday because I'm in the middle of a week-long slap on the wrist from Twitter for sharing something from the Daily Mail, but that doesn't matter. I'm not a martyr. So I can't retweet it, Patricia. I'm sorry. Lucy says, Richie, ask Dr. Vernon about the mini-eye epidemic in the children's eyesight due to masks, please. Alder Hey, Liverpool are doing a paper on the mini epidemic of that. They're seeing children having eye problems from wearing the masks. That won't surprise you, I don't think.
No, it's in some quotes from some dentists in the little book I mentioned, the eye problems.
That's
because
right.
Of air coming, hitting the mask and then going up into the eyes. It's a well-documented problem. The book that I just mentioned is free.
Free.
It's on thelightpaper.co.uk and it's on my website, vernoncommon.com. And it's on the health page. You just go up somewhere near the top and you'll see the PDF to proof that masks do more harm than good. I'm not selling it. It's been given away, but it's full of references. And if the 77th Brigade would like to help themselves to a few, they might actually manage to get some facts right for a change.
I'm going to get the book on richieallen.co.uk as soon as possible as well, hopefully sometime this week. Those books that Vernon has mentioned there. I have read the book on masks. I did know the answer, but I'm asking the question. There are people listening to this program for the very first time. Dr. Vernon, Vernon Coleman is our guest. It is vernoncoleman.com is the website. Just click health on the left-hand side and you'll get all the articles and the links to the books as well. Let me play you 45 seconds of a clip. You and I have lamented the inability of journalists to do their job. Now, you mentioned the World Health Organization earlier on. They dropped the bombshell about 10 days ago, did the WHO, when they issued a directive, didn't they? Telling basically testers that they shouldn't take a positive test of an asymptomatic person. They shouldn't take it too seriously and they should retest again. That was bombshell. I mean, we knew that, but that should be bombshell information. And it also mentioned that the amplifying of the test samples shouldn't be any more than 30, which you mentioned earlier on. Now, that's the sort of thing that should have ended this entire scam if we had a media. But the media doesn't do that. So on Good Morning Britain, you've got Piers Morgan and Susanna Reid, and they insult and they harangue government ministers not to actually say this is a scam, why are you doing it? No, they harangue them because they want more lockdown, and they say you should be locking down even sooner. So rather than do their jobs, this is Susanna Reid, Vernon, speaking on Good Morning Britain today. I couldn't believe my ears when I heard this.
I do just want to say to people, you know, this will pass. Things are going to get better. And there's a line in that film, just hold on. That's what we've got to do, just hold on. Because, you know, there is a light now at the end of the tunnel. The lockdown will come to an end. The vaccination programme is making history. It is rolling out at an incredible rate. We are world-beating. More jabs going into more arms, which means that we will be safer. And we can emerge from this darkness blinking into the light. And I promise it will get better. So if you're finding it tough right now, you know, there are resources online. And Hussein Manuar puts it so perfectly, doesn't he, in that piece of film. But I promise it will get better.
You're a journalist, Vernon. That's nothing short of disgusting, right?
That was not journalism. That was Nazi fascist. Oh, I don't know. It's not going to get better because they don't want it to get better. It will never get better unless we make it get better. There will be lockdowns and social distancing and masks forever unless we stop it. You can tell it's a scam. You can tell the whole thing is a scam because they won't debate it. If never in my life have I known such a total shutdown on doctors and journalists trying to get out the truth. You're not supposed to give medical treatment without informed consent. It's illegal to give medical treatment without informed consent, but millions of people are having vaccines without informed consent. Unless they listen to your programs or my stuff or the other people who, tons of other people who are putting out the truth, all on oppressed, suppressed social media, people won't know, and they don't know. They don't understand that the risks with these vaccines, about one in 30 people have serious adverse effects. The number of people who are going to be maimed or killed by the vaccines, and yet the government will say, you know it as well as I do, they will say anybody who has a vaccine problem, oh, it's a coincidence. If you die within 28 days of having a PCR test, a fake PCR test, then you died of COVID-19. And if you, the whole fakery has gone beyond all conception. The vaccines now, when people have, when they die or when they have a problem, and that is going to be the biggest problem out amongst over 80-year-olds, the default diagnosis for an 80-year-old plus who falls ill, who's had the vaccine, is vaccine damage. But they're none of them going to be admitted as vaccine damage. They're going to be COVID-19. So we need more vaccines. It's a perpetuating, self-perpetuating myth. The problems that are going to be created, and they knew right from the start that what they had to do was to suppress the truth. Don't forget, I keep coming back to this. In March of 2020, the government's advisors downgraded the coronavirus, COVID-19, they downgraded it to flu level because they said it's not a serious infectious disease. That was the government's own advisors. The government ignored that. This was in the UK, but it was picked up, you know, ignored everywhere else as well. The UK government ignored that. And a couple of days later, they published a white paper of about 350 pages, which they obviously didn't knock off in a day and a half, putting us all under house arrest, changing the entire world, taking away our rights, stopping elections, almost giving them the right to introduce mandatory vaccinations. It's never going to get any better unless we make it get better. This is a war we're fighting. A lot of people don't seem to understand that. They think it's a time to mess around with little debates about whether it's called a vaccine or not, or whether there's a virus or an exosome. Don't debate those things. They're things to debate. I agree. Talk about them if you like. But they aren't the issue. The issue is the problem that we're all going to end up locked up, social distancing and wearing masks forever unless we stop this. Because the whole thing is a fraud. It's been lie after lie after lie, and they will not debate with anybody. They won't debate. All they do with doctors who speak up is, if they've got a job in the health service, they fire them, or they take them off the medical register. This happens all over the world, exactly the same thing. The journalists have been fired for actually daring to talk about it, to try to talk about it. The huge problems that are being created deliberately, they're not accidental, they're deliberate. The way they're destroying the economy is deliberate. The mask wearing, which is causing so much harm, excuse me, that's deliberate. There was actually a little bit of good news. Somebody who was told that they were refused access because they wouldn't wear a mask, they got £7,000 in compensation. Quite right, too. It was a pity it didn't go to court. They settled because the people who were guilty knew that they didn't have a chance. The fact is that the non-mask wearers, those of us who aren't wearing masks, we're the only ones who are going to have any brains in a few years'
left
time.
Our heads,
it'll be too late by then.
You see, the problem is, you touched on this earlier on, the problem is people, this has been such a horrendous experience for people. It's been horrendous. I speak to everybody I meet, generally. I spend pretty much every morning in my local park and I speak to people. I very rarely talk about the radio programme or tell them that I work in the media. I don't do any of that. Some people know, but many don't. That's the way it goes. And I can see how miserable they are. They're horribly miserable and upset and bewildered and confused. And, of course, indoors they're having arguments with their spouses and their financial worries are starting to get on top of them. All of these things, worrying about their children. And you touched on this. Next thing, it's like, well, we have the jab and it's a case of hallelujah. They can't wait to get it. At a leisure centre on Liverpool Street, just across the road from the main post office depot in Salford, for the last few days, I think they've gone 24 hours a day. I actually think they're doing 24 hours a day. I sometimes run past the Vernon when I'm on my runs, and I can see the queues of expectant people who can't wait to go in and get it because they are miserable, and I feel so sorry for them. And it's very hard to reach those people because, as you said to me before, it's a case of, what? An agenda? Oh, why would anybody do that? Just give me the jab. Give me the jab. That's where so many people are now.
Absolutely. And that's why I keep saying we've got to deal with this as a war. We've got to deal with it very seriously. And we can't mess around with debating minor, fundamental, but minor issues. We've got to go for the jugular. We've got to point out that the vaccine does cause serious, serious health problems. And we have no idea what it's going to do in 10 years. There's the problem with the people who have it. Their immune systems are going to be so confused and bewildered that if they then come in contact with what's called the wild coronavirus in a few months' time, heaven knows what's going to happen. Nobody knows what's going to happen then. The lies, there's the lies about the hospitals being in crisis. Oh, my God. The hospitals are not in crisis. They have more empty beds than they usually have. The problems are there are less beds anyway because they keep closing beds. I've forgotten the figures, but it's about a third less of the number of beds than there were 10, 15 years ago.
Well, actually, in 30 years, would you believe this? In 30 years, the NHS has lost more than half of its bed capacity.
Many new administrators it's got. If you show a graph, the number of new administrators and the number of beds that have gone down, it's almost the negative, you know, they're opposites.
Yeah.
More administrators, less beds. But what they say, they keep saying, oh, there's 90,000 NHS staff off with COVID-19. That's a lie. There are not 90,000 NHS staff off with COVID. There are 90,000 NHS staff off because they tested positive. And they're tested positive, so they aren't allowed to go to work. The hospitals are a mess because they've got socially distanced wards with six people in when they should have far more than that. There's an increase in the seriously unwell people who are putting a bit of a strain, or a lot of a strain, on hospitals because their cancer was never treated. They were never operated on. There's the problem with bed blocking because people can't go home because they've got a vulnerable person at home. There's the people who are... there's the very fact that the NHS was actually short of staff before this all started. There's the extra load on hospitals because GPs don't seem to be doing anything anymore apart from giving vaccinations. They're saying, oh, well, there's queues of ambulances. There's always queues of ambulances in the winter. Think back, all the flu cases, the tens of thousands of people who die of flu. I would remind you that in an average year, a billion people around the world get the flu. Now compare that with the number of people who are claimed to have had COVID-19. And then, of course, there are all the people, all the NHS staff, who've had the vaccine and are ill and they can't go to work. That's why the NHS, all of those together is why the NHS, I'm sure there's some I've forgotten, but all of those together are why the NHS appears to be struggling.
Well, you've only got to go back to winter 2019, 2018, 2017, 2016. And if you want, all of the information is still online. Look at the front pages of the newspapers from those winters and you see the same headlines year in, year out. NHS in crisis, NHS at breaking point, not enough staff. You hit the nail on the head. And this is the reason why I will never forgive the presenters of the commercial and national stations, television and radio. I'll never forgive them because they know this. They know this to be true. They know that COVID's got nothing to do with the NHS being under pressure. And yet they refuse to articulate that. They refuse to report it. I'll never forgive them as long as they live.
No, I won't either. This has always been a psyop. This was right from the beginning. The government's had military psyop advisors telling them how to create more fear. You've seen the papers. Yeah. These exist. People don't believe it, but it's true. They've got advisors telling the government how to ramp up the fear, what sort of words to use to frighten people. And suppressing the truth is a vital part of that fear game. And the lies just keep... There's this nonsense that you can pass it on asymptomatically. So they say that it's transmitted by coughing and sneezing, but if you aren't coughing and sneezing, you can somehow still transmit it. Well, there was a research done in China on just under 10, I mentioned this last week, just under 10 million patients. It's the biggest trial I've ever seen in my life. 19 doctors, just under 10 million patients. And they concluded, stark, no question, conclusion, it doesn't transmit asymptomatic.
It does not. That's right. It does not.
But what's all this cobblers about? Well, we've got to watch it because even if you haven't got it and don't think you've got it, we'll give you a test to find out if you've got it because it's the plague and it's so dangerous that you might not know if you've got it. So we'll give you a test to see if you could conceivably have got it.
And don't forget last March, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's still, as far as I understand it, heading up the, you know, the COVID fight and
not
advising...
Very... No! I'm serious, he had the vaccine and said he wasn't very well.
Is that right? I didn't know that. More on that now in a minute. But Fauci himself said back in March last year, he said that asymptomatic people have never been the drivers of transmission, ever. He said this. And
he
then somebody
wear masks. He said wearing masks is just virtue signalling.
That's right. And then somebody slapped him down because a few weeks later he was warning about asymptomatic transmission and he was telling people to wear masks.
The mortality rate was the same as the flu.
And he's had the vaccine and he didn't feel so well, is that right?
I've read this evening, I read that he'd had the vaccine and he wasn't too well.
Wow.
Well, let's all send him a get well card, eh?
Let's send him a get well card. And I do mention on the programme from time to time a journalist called Spiro Skouras, who's a good friend of the programme's. Folks, find him on YouTube at Spiro Skouras. You can't miss him. He's a great lad, very conscientious journalist. He's just sent me a link to an article in The Sun. Newspaper, The Sun, oh my God. Experts from the University of East Anglia, Earlham Institute, recommend that we need to start vaccinating our dogs and cats with the COVID jab because they're pretty sure that dogs and cats can spread the infection. Now.
They're pretty sure. I mean, just pretty sure. Just
pretty
the
sure.
Government. The government has got the advice was that breastfeeding women shouldn't have it because nobody knew whether it was safe for their babies. And the government said, "Oh well, it's probably all right. So have it." Probably. Oh, would you get on if you went to a fairground and they had a ride and it said probably, would you go on?
No.
If they had a car and it said this car is probably safe, would you buy a car that said probably safe? Well, they're saying this vaccine is probably safe for breastfeeding women. So go on, have some. Oh, dear. Who are these people? Well, we know who they are. We know who some of them are. But this is, the whole thing has been so planned. I saw something the other day from the World Bank, who published a projected appraisal for COVID-19 on the 2nd of April 2020, which included an expected project closing date of the 31st of March 2025.
Yeah.
The whole thing is planned down to the last little bit.
And this is the pisser. This is, again, this information is in the hands of BBC producers. I said in the monologue, in the first hour of the programme, not that I know anything, I'm just a mouthpiece, but, you know, I do a little bit of research before saying anything. The BBC, the country's most well-known presenters, could end this within a day just by reporting on the stuff that you've said to me tonight. And Proly has tweeted to say, Richie, I met a midwife on my rounds the other day. She's in forced isolation, having tested positive, yet she's got no symptoms. 14 days off work and there's a crisis going on. Lady is told to stay at home. She's got no symptoms.
They could end this now. They don't have to actually be daring and say these things themselves. They could just interview someone
who
says these things. And then let the public decide. That's called information. It's called informed choice. And it used to be what journalists did. They provided both sides and let the public make up its own mind. Now all we have is proselytizing journalists who are doing nonsense like that clip you played, which...
Propaganda.
Something like a bad vicar from a bad film.
I've never seen anything like it.
We must all hold together and there'll be light at the end of the tunnel and we'll be able to see some future through the little window in the
room. When the hope is injected into our arms. Listen to one very small clip, the final clip I've got for you. Because a few weeks back, you starkly spoke about the impact of lockdown on the well-being of children. And it was compelling to listen to it and very depressing as well at the same time. And I was listening to LBC Radio earlier on. Nick Ferrari was taking calls, essentially, and somebody pretending to be a teacher or claiming to be a teacher or somebody like that, she rang up and said, oh, this is great for children or it's no big deal. Children are resilient, no problems. Well, this prompted a man in Camden to ring up. He was irate. His name is Lewis. He's a head teacher, and Lewis explains very quickly how he feels this is impacting on children. Have a listen to what he says.
I think she grossly underplayed the colossal damage that's being done to our children's future by these school closures.
Right.
We've actually absolutely trashed the prospects of an entire generation, really, that this has lasting and profound consequences. The home learning is not at all anywhere near what is delivered in schools. The mental health aspects are enormous. The government has just launched this program of saying, look into their eyes, COVID victims.
Yes.
How about if we put up similar pictures of victims of child abuse that is skyrocketing, going through the roof? There are children stuck at home all over the country, unable to get out. Their futures are not being considered at all.
Well, what do you think of that?
That's absolutely true. The suicide rate amongst children, amongst everybody, but amongst children, is phenomenal. I've been following and picking out some of the suicide risks. I mean, the suicide among teenagers. I won't name them because I don't want to hurt anybody, but I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teenagers that picked up in just moments. Teenagers who killed themselves because they couldn't cope with the isolation. In India, 66 children committed suicide within 100 days of the first lockdown. You don't commit suicide unless you're seriously, seriously anxious, depressed, and you've lost all hope and you've abandoned life. These children will never recover from this. I way, way back I think probably April, May last year, I wrote that I didn't. They had to be very, very fast to sort this out because children would never recover. Forget about the fact that they'll be illiterate, they'll be innumerate. They will never recover psychologically. I saw a report by some psychiatrists. I think it was 25% of the children they'd studied wouldn't come out of their rooms because they were so, they're psychologically, they're so scarred. And when, if they do ever open the schools again, we have to look at Agenda 21. I know a lot of people don't believe this, but there's a piece that you kindly just put on your website about this, about the plan, what's going on, why are they destroying businesses? It's not an accident. It's not, nothing that's happening is an accident. Nothing that's happening is coincidental. They're doing it on purpose. If the schools do open after Easter, where is it now? It's January. Where's Easter? April?
April, yeah.
They're considering opening the schools after Easter. I would not be surprised if they leave the schools shut. And I would love to know who is running this, because it's people, school teachers' unions, as far as I can see. How many? There was a report that said that teachers have got no more risk of getting it than anybody else, even though they're mixing with all these children. And as far as I'm aware, no healthy child has died
no.
from COVID-19. Yep. And it's very rare for children to have it or pass it on. There was another paper which showed they never pass it on, even if they have it. The craziness of this is that a whole, not one generation, two generations, the teenagers who are suffering because if they want to get on with their work, and don't forget, an enormous number of teachers are not doing any help, not providing any help for home teaching. So the kids are just sitting at home playing games, which will wreck their brains, or watching telly.
They are, they're on computer games. That's so important. It's so important you saying that. That is huge, because I did hear a woman speaking to BBC Radio 5 Live this morning who said she despairs. She can't cope with trying to provide the educational needs of her children. And they are invariably playing those ridiculous games, those free games on the phones. Devastating.
It's the whole thing is way beyond words that you could use normally, because as I keep saying, it's a war. They're destroying all these small businesses. I had a great idea. If you're running a bookshop, why not have a box full of apples and a box full of sweets and sell them? And then couldn't you call yourself a food shop, and then you could be open?
Yeah.
Would you like a book as well with your apples, sir? Oh, yes. All right. I mean, you've got to think of ways round this. People have got to look at the lunacy. I had a letter from a friend in Northern Ireland who he said he'd been visited by some alleged health officers telling him that he would have to be vaccinated or he'd lose all his benefits and his national insurance numbers would be deactivated. Now, he thinks that's a fraud, and I suspect it's a
fraud.
But
hoax,
who
yeah.
knows? What do you believe anymore? It's become almost impossible. I do believe that part of the plan is to bankrupt an enormous number of people. Interest rates at the moment are very, very low. Interest rates have been in this country in my lifetime over 20, over 30% a year. How many people are going to be able to cope with their mortgage payments if interest rates suddenly go sky high because of the vast expenditure that's going on at the moment? The government throwing money at everybody with furlough schemes and so on, and everybody being pushed for more money. There's going to be a huge economic
backlash. That's a really serious point, you know, that. And you know, sorry to interrupt you, it's very important this, because you made a statement a moment ago, and I might, again, people might be wondering why didn't I challenge it. I didn't, because it's true. But you're right, the Office for National Statistics have acknowledged that teachers are not at any significant risk, really, of death from COVID-19. They have no higher risk than the general population, and they've absolutely confirmed that kids are at no risk whatsoever either. Again, it's further evidence that there is no evidence, and that not only is there no evidence, but it's known to this government that there's no evidence. But yet they pursue these ridiculous and very damaging policies anyway. And just before you come back in, and you'll have... We're coming up on time anyway. Peter Ebden, our friend of the programmes, is listening to this with interest. And he said, Dr. Vernon has made a very good point regarding informed consent. I wonder, is there a single person in the country that has been told what the ingredients of this vaccine are? That's a great point. By a doctor. Knows
generally
the answer.
Speaking, no. The people, by law, people, if you're taking a drug for high blood pressure, heart disease, cancer, you have to be told. The doctor has to tell you what the drug is, what it's for, and what the side effects and what the dangers are. That's just the way they have to do it because they're worried about litigation. As far as I am aware, and I have been doing nothing else but study this for since March last year, as far as I'm aware, there is nothing that patients are being told. They are not being given honest information about what's happening. They are not being warned about the side effects, which are horrendous. They're not being warned about all the terrible things that can happen. I saw another paper I found today that was actually quite from the beginning of this whole fraud, another paper which showed that the number of children dying, small children dying, and this was a paper that was published in the British Medical Journal, the number of small children dying was down quite considerably on normal, in fact, very considerably. And you know, one of the conclusions they drew was maybe this is because those children haven't been having their regular vaccination.
Yeah.
Rethink the whole vaccination program. Slipped into a British Medical Journal. They should have broadcast that all over the place. But as far as I'm aware, that never got any coverage because these things just don't. The whole scam is a deliberate attempt. Everything comes together to destroy people's immune systems. The masks destroy your immune systems. The social distancing destroys immune systems. The vaccine, this particular vaccine, certainly destroys immune systems. The lack of sunshine, because people have been kept in for so long, that means that you get no vitamin D. And really and truly, and again, I've been saying this till I'm hoarse with it, take vitamin D supplements. 83%, I think it was 83%, it was something like that, of the people who had COVID-19 had it, allegedly had it, or had it with symptoms, 83%, it might have been 82, might have been 84, but I think it was 83, had a vitamin D deficiency, because vitamin D protects from all sorts of diseases, and it also protects, it also boosts your immune system.
Yeah.
What, instead of, if this was real, if this was real, if we were being, really had a big plague, what the government should have been doing.
Vernon has dropped out momentarily. You dropped out momentarily. If it was real, what would the government be doing? You said if it's real, the government would be doing this. Go on.
Giving vitamin D tablets.
Giving
to
vitamin
everyone.
D, yeah.
I know you can take too much, but it's a hell of a job. You'd have to take an enormous quantity. But if you just take the dose of whatever it is you get, and before anybody says anything, I'm not selling vitamin D.
No, you're not selling anything. It's cheap as chips online. And by the way, I want to read out this tweet. John in Salford, who's a carpenter, tweeted this. He says, a client told me a couple of weeks ago that his neighbour's son, 22, God love him, hanged himself in his bedroom, depressed with the lockdown. He said they are a lovely family. Lives decimated. That's 7 that I know of since March. But still, I don't know anybody that has died of coronavirus, says John.
No, I don't know anybody who's died.
Me neither.
Either. But I know of a lot of people. I know the names and details of a lot of people who have killed themselves. I just want to go back to something that I mentioned earlier en passant, but which is really very important. And that, again, nobody's discussed this, but nobody's discussed any of this. Paradoxical immune enhancement. If you have the COVID-19 vaccine, you may develop very high antibody levels. Now, you might think that's a good thing, but it isn't, because when you're then exposed to the coronavirus, you can get a severe immune overreaction and die.
Yeah.
And when you look at the list, the official list of side effects with these vaccines, all of them, death is on the list. And you stop and look, what's the risk? for any, the average age at which people die of this COVID-19 is much the same as the flu. It's over 80. The risk if you're under 70 is
minimal.
It's a 99.9 something, you'll survive.
Yeah.
And yet these people are taking a vaccine with a 1 in 30 or 1 in just over 30 chance of having a serious adverse event, which might be death, it might be paralysis, and maybe you might get better from the paralysis or maybe you won't. But they aren't telling us, all of these people who are dying of strokes, there's a huge list on, I think it's on your website as well, it was on my website, about all the terrible side effects that have happened and the death.
Yeah, yeah.
All of which, according to the governments, are coincidental. Just so happens that so-and-so had the vaccine and 3 hours later died. Just so happens that this perfectly healthy guy had the vaccine and then a couple of days later he has a stroke or a heart attack.
And the 30 elderly citizens in Norway that died within a few hours or a day of getting it, and then they said, oh, well, they were old anyway. Well, why give them the vaccine then?
Exactly. They're giving the vaccine to people who are over 100.
Yeah.
And it's never been tested, I don't think, on people who are over 100. Indeed, at one point, they did say that it shouldn't be given to anyone who's frail.
Madness.
Well, there's quite a lot of people who are over 80 who's frail, and yet that bloody Matt Hancock keeps going on saying, oh, well, we've got another large tranche of people who are over 80 that we've injected with our wonderful vaccine. And, of course, the end is the end of all this. There were three things I originally said that this was all about. Three things. One was that they wanted to kill off a load of old people. Well, they did that very successfully with the care homes all around the world. Secondly, they wanted to have mandatory vaccinations, and that's now very apparently about to come in with these wretched health passports, which are one
coercion.
Of them has been set up with the World Economic Forum, which seems now to be running the country.
Yeah.
And there's one set up by Bill Gates' Microsoft. That's called a vaccination credential something or other. And the World Economic Forum's got one called, Commons something. And I think Larry Ellison's company, Oracle, which, by the way, of course, was founded with the help of the CIA, they've got a health passport. All these people are jumping up and down with their health passport. They're not nice little bits of paper.
No.
These are, either you have it under your skin or you have it on your phone app.
And you're not going anywhere without it. We've got 40 seconds left now. I've got to say that because I have to keep these live shows to 2 hours for obvious reasons. So 40 seconds before you get a very quick final word, read Dr. Vernon Coleman on his website, vernoncoleman.com. Let's give a shout out to Darren Smith, thelightpaper.co.uk. You can read Vernon there. There are links to his books there as well, the free books, which are vital. Very quick final word to you, and I know we'll be picking this up again real soon. Go ahead.
It's a war. We're not messing around here. This isn't a time for debate and discussion of the nice points. It's a war.
Great to have you back on today. Thanks for coming on. Look forward to the next time. VernonColeman.com, folks. That's the website. I'll be reposting, with Vernon's permission, his articles in the future. But do go to his website first, VernonColeman.com. Thanks, Vernon.
Thanks, Richie.
Always a pleasure. Great stuff. Dr. Vernon Coleman live on Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show. That's all we have time for today. A big shout out to him for that. We will be back tomorrow at 5 o'clock UK time. Do stay in touch with RichieAllen.co.uk for regular articles and things of interest that you might want to get involved with. You can comment, you can do all sorts of stuff on there now. Set up an account and all the rest of it. So do that. Please do that. So I've got a former UK Health Minister, Edwina Curry, on the programme, I think tomorrow. I'm pretty sure it's tomorrow. Tony Gosling is back on the show. Kevin Barrett will be on the programme this week as well. And I might fit a phone in. If not, the phone in will be very early next week. I promise you. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your Monday evening. Say hello to Spiro Skouras on activistpost.com. He's one of the good guys, the Spiro. Until tomorrow at 5 o'clock, it's bye from the BBG. Look after yourselves.